lights out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sunday have crashed. They've gone into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds off the back of a Monaco Grand Prix that wasn't the most exciting race in the world, but some exciting things did happen over the weekend, and I guess we should start with qualifying, because poor old Ferrari, it's the first race they've really looked something a bit special, and of course Charles Leclerc puts it on pole, and then crashes immediately after. Lots of people said, oh, he did that on purpose, he's done a Schumacher, which I didn't think at the time, but it turns out he obviously didn't do it on purpose because his car then didn't drive at all to even start the Grand Prix. So I felt very sorry for Charles, but good to see, you know, Ferrari back in it a little bit, albeit at a slow circuit like Monaco.
The only thing I would say to that is he could have done it on purpose, but not expecting the level of damage that he got. Because, and the only reason I say that is he spent, you know, three practice sessions going through that corner, and then he puts it on pole, and then suddenly when I watch the slow-mo back, it's almost as if he turned in so that he would hit the Arco on the entry to that chicane. At the time I thought he'd done it on purpose, I must admit, but obviously with the damage that was sustained, you'd have gone, well, if he did do it on purpose, he clearly didn't want it to cause that much damage, you know, and the rest is history. Now the jury's out on this, because Ferrari say, well, we checked the gearbox, that was the main concern, wasn't it, that the gearbox may have been damaged, and if they had to replace it, it would have been a grid penalty. So they said, we checked the gearbox and that was fine. And apparently the problem that they encountered on the way to the grid on race day was nothing to do with the gearbox. It was a left-hand drive shaft. Now, had they not checked that, or had they checked it the day before and gone, yeah, that's all right too, and then it had failed on the way out to the grid? Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he did it on purpose, personally. I think if he did that on purpose, that's bizarre. I don't think he's that type of driver.
I don't either.
He's good enough to kind of get there on merit, and I just can't see it that he did that on purpose. But I agree, you know, like, you know, did Ferrari not check that car all over? You know, Brundle mentioned on commentary that they can't simulate everything. They can't put load through the gears, for example. So there's a few things they can't do in the garage to check. So was it connected to something they couldn't check, or did they not check it properly, or was it more broken than it appeared to be? It's a weird one, but very sad. You know, when you think they could have changed the gearbox, I guess it wouldn't have made no difference, I guess, if it was nothing to do with the gearbox. But it's good to see them back at the front, but yeah, a kind of sad ending before it even started for poor old Charles Leclerc. But then I suppose the good news for Ferrari is great little race for Carlos Sainz.
Yeah, I know Carlos was frustrated by the red flag because he felt as he was on a lap that could have put him on pole. The same with Verstappen and Bottas, to be fair. I noticed that Bottas's radio reaction when the red flag came out was, oh dear, and Max used the F word about 15 times. So obviously, he's more passionate behind the visor, I'm guessing, and Carlos Sainz wasn't happy either. All three of them could have set a pole lap, so we'll never know which one of them might have done that, but obviously it panned out the way it did. Charles Leclerc, I felt very sorry for him. I thought he handled it really maturely, actually. I thought he was good. He stuck around. He was there for the prize giving afterwards. I thought, you know, he did his bit as an ambassador for the Ferrari team. And yeah, Ferrari look as though they've made progress. The interesting thing I thought, when they interviewed Toto Wolff on the Thursday, they asked him a question and his answer blew me away a little bit. They talked about development and he basically said, oh no, we're not developing the car anymore this season. We're going to concentrate. He said 80% of our concentration is on 2022, which obviously is a massive year with the rule changes. But even Martin Brundle said, he went, hang on a minute. He said, they're not developing the car when Red Bull clearly are. And we saw from this weekend that Red Bull are now getting the upper hand, albeit at Monaco, which is a car that they're more suited to.
Yeah, I think there's a few things at play here as well, because I think it was David Coulthard said this weekend that Bottas, he thinks, might have already been told he's not going to be in the car next year, which is why he didn't play ball and let Hamilton through at the earlier Grand Prix. And he does seem a little bit kind of less team player-y, I guess, Bottas. Hamilton had a proper wobble this weekend. I don't really know what went on there, but you do get the feeling that There's a few cracks appearing inside that Mercedes team. Now, if these two drivers know this information, let's say, for example, Bottas is moving on next year and he knows that he's going to be driving very differently. Let's say Hamilton has the knowledge in the back of his head that they've only got 20% of the team looking at upgrades for this year and the Red Bull is as good as it is already. And he knows, like you say, the Red Bull are going to carry on developing the car. These are going to play mind games on both those two drivers, probably for the better for Bottas because he'll drive like he doesn't care. But for the worse, for Hamilton, where he'll be driving thinking, well, hang on, you know, if we're three or four races in and this is happening already and we're having these weird calls where I'm getting overtaken by quite a few drivers, and you could tell how angry he was on his radio calls, kind of like, come on, guys. And I think he said afterwards that he said, there's nothing for me to learn from this weekend. I did nothing wrong, but the team have got a lot to learn or something. And it was a very kind of weird, angry comment. And you just feel like there's more going on behind the scenes at Mercedes that no one is particularly happy about. And that could be it, the fact that they're not going to be, you know, developing that car onwards.
Well, one thing to note from this weekend was that the chief strategist, I can't say that word,
it's easy for you to say.
Yeah, at Mercedes is now on maternity leave. So the first race since she's left is being, obviously the strategy is being managed by someone else. So that might have played into it. Let's have a listen to Hamilton's radio calls. Because again, he does nothing for his profile. You know, you've got a camp of people who love Hamilton. You've got a camp of people who say he's arrogant and he's a bit like a spoiled brat when things don't go his way. And making these sort of calls on the radio, I don't think did him any favours. This is how it played out after Hamilton's pit stop.
How am I still behind him, man? Come on. What has just happened, guys? I've just lost two races.
Valtteri is out for race.
I don't know what's happening, guys. I saved the tyres to go longer. You made me stop before everyone.
And Lewis, we're under threat of losing position to Perez as well. I'm sorry about that.
I've lost position to Perez.
Yeah, he is yet to stop, currently doing 14.6.
So Perez is up ahead.
AFM currently in Perez P4.
Now, I can understand why Hamilton is annoyed. He's tried to drive in a conservative manner to save his tyres so that he can go longer. And the team have made the strategy call and called him in. Now, when they called him in, he didn't argue with the call, by the way. He did pit as he was instructed to do. We've heard in the past that Hamilton sometimes says, no, I'm staying out longer. He didn't do that. He came in for the pit stop because he believed in the strategy and the call was right. Now, obviously, when he comes out, he realises that he's got... Well, three or four cars have now got the jump on him. I thought it was quite interesting that Bono thought, I may as well pile on the extra bad news in this next radio message by saying, yeah, we're screwed with Perez as well, just to get it all the bad news out of the way in sort of one go, really. But Hamilton, the way he talks on the radio sometimes, he does come across as a bit of a spoiled brat when things don't go his way.
Yeah, and you know, there's a time and a place for these kind of things, because you've got drivers like Max Verstappen who, you know, drives... like crazy, drives the wheels off every car he's in. He's a brilliant driver, but his radio calls are almost comedy. Like, you know, it'll be more sarcastic than anything. If something's not gone his way, he might make a sarcastic remark. But 9 times out of 10, when Verstappen's on the radio, it's literally like he's sat in his bath at home, and it like he's just not. He never sort of seems stressed or het up or anything like that. But you're right, Hamilton, you know, really does get on it, and he does seem to throw a lot of stuff his engineer's way mid-race. A lot of that is frustration, obviously, but I agree with you. I think, you know, to be a popular driver, to be a good driver, you need to be a bit ruthless, but you don't need to be like that. You don't need to speak to people like that. And it's one of the, yeah, Alonso was very bad for this as well. Do you remember when he did his radio calls about, you know, GP2 engine? And it's like they've got to get it out in public because it makes them feel better to blame the team publicly, I guess, to make them look better or feel better. I don't know what it is, but, you know, you don't get that from a lot of the other drivers. And drivers like Ricciardo or Lando, you know, you just wouldn't hear a radio call like that off them. So it's interesting. But like I say, I feel like there's more stuff behind the scenes at Mercedes that's rattled Hamilton a little bit, and he's not enjoying it, is he?
It doesn't seem to be at the moment, no. I mean, he's now second in the Drivers' Championship, 101 points, Max Verstappen on 105. Having said that, Monaco's fairly unique in that the Mercedes car's just not suited to those really slow turns and the really tight turns at the Lowe's hairpin, for instance. The Red Bull always does well in Monaco, and the next race is Azerbaijan, and I think Mercedes are going to have the upper hand there because of their straight-line speed. It's a very fast circuit. You know, people are saying now, oh, it's, you know, game over for Hamilton this season. Well, it's not. You know, he's 4 points behind, and I still think Mercedes have the better overall package. It's just not that suited to Monaco. And, of course, we heard all weekend that they were saying, well, no one designs a car just for Monaco. You've got to be a complete package for the whole season. It just looks as though Red Bull managed the Monaco conditions slightly better than Mercedes. So you can't write Mercedes off. And now Hamilton's backpedaling a little bit. I noticed he made an announcement this morning. He said, me and the team need to dig deep and move on together. You know, so he's calmed down from his initial frustrations over the weekend. Listen, there were some absolutely terrific drives on Sunday in Monaco. I thought it was really interesting that Perez did as well as he did. He was challenging for third place. He finished it in fourth. Their strategy call for the Red Bull team was just perfect in that regard. Leaving him out longer really meant that he made up positions from his disappointing qualification. One thing that I discussed with you whilst the race was on via text, I've got a feed to Formula One TV. And it's really interesting because you can, I mean, this is quite geeky, but I've done this for the last couple of races. Just before the start of the race, I listened to a driver's radio feed and their in-car camera footage, just them. So there's no commentary, there's no nothing. You can just see the view from the car, and you can hear the engineer talking to them. Fascinating. I did it with Perez this weekend. So before the parade lap, you can hear the engineer saying 30 seconds, grid's clear. Then he counts him down. He goes 10 seconds, 5 seconds, engage boost or whatever, you know, all these instructions. And then on the parade lap itself, the engineer is saying, okay, 4 burnouts when you get to the grid, 4 burnouts, revolution 6,000. It's like, it's really, it's geeky stuff, but it's great. And then the engineer will say, last car's coming onto the grid, look for lights, look for lights. And it's just like, it's fascinating. And I also did it towards the end of the race when Perez was chasing down Lando Norris for third place. Perez was gaining, and we all thought he might be able to get ahead of Norris. But something they didn't pick up on the commentary, which was fascinating to me, was that Perez was running out of fuel. Fuel is not a massive issue at Monaco, but of course they put less fuel in the cars because they don't want the extra weight. So his engineer came on the radio and said, we've got 5 laps to go and you have 3 laps of fuel remaining. You need to lift and coast. So you could visibly hear the engine. He was lifting off the throttle as he was coming into the corners a lot earlier than he normally would. And that meant that Norris was able to stay ahead and the gap didn't close in the last 3 or 4 laps of the race. It was fascinating.
Yeah, and you know, I think I said last week on the podcast, I feel like Perez is the perfect number two driver at Red Bull, because Verstappen is obviously the team leader. Verstappen's the guy they've got all their eggs behind. And is that an expression? All their eggs behind? You know what I mean? They've put all their resources behind Verstappen, obviously. But Perez, I think, is an incredibly solid number two driver who's also, you know, a race winner himself. And I just feel like Perez is a great choice, because I feel like he will get to grips with that Red Bull. He will get better and better and better as the season goes on. And I think by the end of the season, just when they need it, that's when he's going to be brilliant with the rear gunner stuff and getting points for the team. And we saw it this weekend. You know, Bottas went out the race. Hamilton finished down in like 7th, wasn't he? Yep. And the Red Bull pick up a lot of points as a team, and they straight away go into the top of the charts as a team, as a constructor. That's the word I wanted. And it's interesting to see, but I think Perez is the ideal choice for this. And I said it last week, I feel like he's going to get better and better and better as the season goes on, and he gets used to that Red Bull, and he, you know, his driving style kind of meshes with the Red Bull. It's fascinating, isn't it? Because Ricciardo is struggling at McLaren, for example.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I heard a comment that Carlos Sainz basically said to him, yeah, it's weird, isn't it? And just like in passing made a comment as if to say, it's a strange car to drive, isn't it? And Carlos Sainz obviously knew it, and you know, Lando's got to grips with it brilliantly, but Ricciardo just seems struggling with that McLaren.
Yeah, very interesting. Two drivers that really disappointed at the weekend was Fernando Alonso, who just couldn't get the Alpine to grip properly around the circuit. Ocon did a better job, I think, and Ricciardo, you know, I just thought it was so disappointing in practice, in qualifying, and in the race itself. You know, you can't really overtake that easily at Monaco, but he was just stuck in the same position from start of race till the end of race. And there's something really weird. I mean, he said when he was spoken to afterwards, he said, is it frustrating or is it puzzling? And he said, it's puzzling. He said, I just can't work out where I'm losing the speed. And if you looked at his times in practice and qualifying, he was a second off the pace. And that is massive in Formula One.
Yeah, and I can't work out what it is, because that seems like a decent car. Lando seems to be driving the wheels off it. You look at Carlos Sainz, you know, he's been in quite a few different teams in the last 4 or 5 years. And he just seems, whatever car he's in, whatever team he's in, he just seems to get in the car, get in the team and just be up to speed almost immediately. You know, a sign of a very, very good underrated driver, I think. But Ricciardo, you know, I rate him. I think he's great. I think he's a very fast driver. I'm baffled myself as to why he's so slow. And it must be absolutely soul destroying to be overtaken by your teammate in a race as well. Like, that's something that you never want to see as any racing driver. But yeah, just it's bizarre, isn't it, that he just can't get to grips with that McLaren.
Yeah, lapped by his teammate, which is just terrible. Some really standout drives for me. Lando Norris, I think, is starting to show how mature he is behind the wheel of that car. We know he likes a laugh. We know he's a bit of a Jack the Lad. But when he's driving, the focus is unbelievable, and he copes with pressure all the time. So I saw a couple of races ago, he coped with Lewis Hamilton being behind him during one particular stint, and he didn't put a wheel wrong, and he did exactly the same for, what, 12, 13 laps with Perez chasing him down. He was inch perfect. At one point, he said on the radio, he said, "Guys, can we have radio silence? I need to concentrate." And I thought that was great. I'm really mature and not bitchy. You know, he was just in the zone. I thought he was really good. And the other person who had a great weekend in terms of performance was Sebastian Vettel. I mean, fifth place, played it really cool. I thought, you know, did the job, and that car is looking as though it's starting to make inroads to being certainly up at the top of the midfield.
Yeah, there's certainly no issues with Formula One going forward, because some mega, mega drivers coming through. You know, so many of these drivers are young as well. Charles Leclerc, Lando, you know, even Carlos Sainz, and just some mega young drivers. It's looking really good for the future. But yeah, you're right. Some of the cars getting together. You know, a lot of it is Monaco, isn't it? Where it's slower, it's more mechanical grip. So a lot of the kind of issues with the cars are hidden a little bit with Monaco, but good to see some drivers and some teams right back up there. Got a lot of time for Vettel. I hope he has a better season, because so far Stroll has kind of outdriven him up until this race at least, and that's something I never thought I'd see. And the same with Ricciardo. I thought Ricciardo would be well up there with Lando, and I thought he'd give Lando a run for his money. But we've said it before, these cars are obviously very different to drive. It's that old analogy, isn't it, when you get a hire car at the airport when you go on holiday and you get in it and you're like, oh, where's the switches? Where's this? How do I turn the windscreen wipers on? You know, it's the same thing for these Formula One drivers and these Formula One cars, but good to see some of them kind of getting their stuff together and getting the teams together and it all sort of gelling and getting back together nicely.
One thing, and Nicky might cover this in the stats, which we'll get from him in a couple of minutes' time. Max Verstappen has now won 12 races at the same age when Hamilton was at his age, had won 8 races. So in that regard, if Max can get in a car which is constantly performing at the top of the grid, chances are he could win more races and more world championships than Hamilton, because he started younger.
Wow, incredible. He's really classy driver. And, you know, like what you said about Lando, it applies to Verstappen as well, just very mature. It amazes me when you hear them speak over the radio, just how calm and relaxed and mature they are, and just how it's all like, you know, he just takes it in his stride, isn't he? He's like, yeah, just driving around Monaco at 200 miles an hour. Yeah, it's all cool. Everything's good. It really does fascinate with all the drivers. But yeah, Verstappen, like you say, could go on, break all the records. A lot of them could. Lando could, Carlos could. You know, there's a lot of very, very young drivers in that field.
And just a quick note on Valtteri Bottas. I'm not his biggest fan, as you well know, but I did feel extra sorry for him at the weekend. He had the chance to put it on pole. He had the chance to outshine Lewis Hamilton, which would have been brilliant for his confidence. And, of course, the pit stop was not his fault. That wheel, by the way, was so jammed on, they couldn't remove it at all after the race. It had to be shipped back to the factory, and they had to dismantle the entire rear of the car to get the wheel off and replace the axle. I thought that was amazing. And did you see the photograph of the wheel nut, which was completely stripped after that pit stop? Unbelievable.
Yeah, all I could think when that was happening is, how do they not have something in place for this very thing? Surely they've thought about this and they thought, you know, this might happen one day. And I've heard a few of the teams have got a giant hammer that they just kind of whack the car with. But yeah, very bizarre, wasn't it? The fact they just kind of went, well, that's it, we can't get the wheel off. That's the race over. You know, all the money they spend on that racing and those teams, you'd think they'd have something in place for that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you really would. Right, let's get some stats. This is an interesting one, always for us on the podcast. It's Nicky from @LightsOut, who will sum it all up for us right now.
Leclerc takes a home pole, Honda have their first Monaco victory since 1992, and Vettel scores Aston Martin's best ever F1 result. Here are the top statistics from the 2021 Monaco Grand Prix weekend. Let's start with home race hero Charles Leclerc, who took pole position at his home event. He was the first Monegasque driver to take pole position at the Monaco Grand Prix since Louis Chiron in 1936. On Sunday though, Leclerc failed to start the race, making the 2021 Monaco Grand Prix only the fifth race in F1 history which the pole sitter failed to start. The last time that the pole sitter did not start the race was at the 2005 United States Grand Prix, when Jarno Trulli, along with plenty of other drivers, pulled into the pit lane at the end of the formation lap. Max Verstappen became the de facto pole sitter and took victory, becoming the 35th different driver to win in Monaco in the Principality's 67 races on the F1 calendar. Verstappen became the first driver to win the Monaco Grand Prix in a car with a Honda-badged engine since Ayrton Senna won for McLaren in 1992. With his victory, Verstappen took the lead in the Drivers' Championship for the first time in his career. He's the fifth driver to lead the title race in the V6 hybrid era, after Nico Rosberg, Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel and Valtteri Bottas. Red Bull took the lead in the Constructors' Championship, marking the first time that Mercedes have not led the championship since Ferrari led after the 2018 British Grand Prix. Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris joined Verstappen on the Monaco Grand Prix podium. It was the first time that Red Bull, Ferrari and McLaren have shared the podium positions since the 2012 United States Grand Prix. It was also the first time since the 2011 Monaco Grand Prix that a Red Bull driver finished first, with a Ferrari driver in second and a McLaren driver in third. Both Sainz and Norris recorded their third podium finishes, and both equaled the best result of their Formula One career to date. Finishing in fifth place, Sebastian Vettel recorded Aston Martin's best ever result in Formula One. His fifth place beats their previous best of sixth, recorded by Roy Salvadori at the 1959 British and Portuguese Grand Prix. Vettel's fifth place marked the first time that he's scored in a race since his podium finish at the 2020 Turkish Grand Prix, and it means that he maintains his record of finishing in the top five on every occasion that he's reached the chequered flag at the Monaco Grand Prix. And finally, this year's Monaco Grand Prix was the shortest ever to reach full distance. With no safety car periods, the race clocked in at 1 hour 38 minutes and 56.82 seconds. The only shorter Monaco Grand Prix was the rain-hit 1984 race, which was called off after just over an hour of racing.
Nice one, Nicky. You can, of course, follow him right across the race weekends at Lights Out is where you can find him on Twitter, and some brilliant stats, as always, with Nicky right across the race weekends. Next one, of course, is up on the 6th of June. That is the Azerbaijan Grand Prix at Baku. You mentioned earlier it's going to be a strong circuit for Mercedes. I still think it's going to be a pretty decent circuit for the Red Bull boys as well, though, this one.
Yeah, it has been traditionally over the years strong for both Mercedes and Red Bull. I think Mercedes do have the upper hand when it comes to straight line speed. But the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, if you remember the first year of running that, it wasn't that eventful. But the second year, do you remember when Alonso was in the McLaren and he brought it back on three wheels to the pits, and we had all that carnage at turn four and five? It was just amazing. I think it's going to be a really good race because the teams are that much closer. You know, we saw in Portimao that the difference between first and tenth on the grid was something like 0.04 seconds. It was just nuts how close they are this year. So I think it's going to be a great race. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, looking forward to it as well. It's one of my favourite circuits. So we're looking forward to that on the 6th of June. We'll be back next week, of course, to kind of talk that through and preview the Baku Azerbaijan Grand Prix. It's easy for me to say.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.